William Schumann wrote some very, very beautiful music. I don't know whether you all heard the violin concerto that was performed here, I think, a season ago. But I think it's one of the great American pieces. And what's so weird for me, being in the West Coast, is that William Schumann and Samuel Barber are usually not performed at all in the West Coast. It's like being in a completely different country. And I did an overture by Samuel Barber in California, and the orchestra had a tremendous problem playing it because they'd never played it before and they couldn't get with the idiom. So I was lucky that William Schumann was my mentor. His second movement in this piece, When Jesus Wept, is one of the most beautiful pieces I've ever heard, and it ends in this surprising chord. You have a drum playing kind of it's almost like a funeral drum roll in the beginning and then at the end, and all of a sudden the last chord comes in, and you can't believe how beautiful that surprise is. So anyway, that's that. Then comes the John Williams piece. The John Williams piece, we only had one rehearsal with the soloist, and that was this afternoon at 1:30, because he flew in last night. And he requested, by the way, I'm going to have to announce that he can't play the encore. Is it printed as an encore in the program?
No, I think it's printed as part of the program.
Okay, well, it's printed, but it was supposed to be kind of an encore, but he says no human being could play that concerto and then play La Virgen de la Macarena. So we're going to do that at the end of the intermission to give his leather lips a chance to relax a little bit. This is a very, very difficult piece, not only for him, but also for the orchestra. So we prepared it yesterday so that it was in perfect shape for him. He recorded this 10 years ago in London, has not performed it since. So I'm sure he had to practice a lot in order to get this piece. He's never performed it in public, in fact. It was not written for him. And, you know, when you record, you can do bar by bar, and all the electronic wizardry that we have at our disposal makes it possible to go bar by bar and make it sound like it's a perfect performance. So the fact that he got through it fabulously this afternoon means that it's going to be great. And listening just purely to the sound of the orchestra, I don't know whether any of you have ever heard any William Walton music. He wrote two symphonies. He wrote a fantastic string quartet that I used to play. Henry V, thank you. And also he wrote that piece with a narrator. This is a test.
Yes. It's a test and one that I'll probably fail.
All right. But anyway, he's got the cello concerto, he's got a viola concerto, and he's got, thank God for iPhones.
Yes.
Facade, you can put it away.
Okay. You were faster than the phone.
Yes. I'm going to go to get myself an iPad. He wrote a very difficult violin concerto, which is very difficult also for the conductor. But anyway, his music, at least until the trumpet plays, sounds like William Walton. Once the trumpet comes in, I'm too busy to hear the orchestra. I'm just busy trying to catch up to our soloist. And then he's going to dazzle you with La Virgen de la Macarena afterwards. Then comes, after that, is anybody here Polish? Well, I understand it's pronounced Lutosławski, which is, do you know how the name of the town, L-O-D-Z, is pronounced? Wodz. So they don't even know how to spell, you know. Anyway, and we have some snippets. We have some snippets from the Lutosławski. The beginning grabs your attention immediately with its extremely powerful first theme, and the first theme is repeated by all the sections. First, you have cellos, violas, violins, eventually the woodwinds come in, and then there's a middle section that is has, they say, Polish folk tunes. Well, I've tried to look up what folk tunes he used, and I was not able to find that information. And whatever he did, it doesn't sound like a folksy piece, you know, like the Romanian dancers of Bartok. There's nothing like that. And then the initial really powerful statement of the theme, which we're going to hear in a minute, is then repeated extremely softly with the woodwinds playing the melody with a incessant celesta, you know, that beautiful instrument, playing one note constantly until the very end of the piece. And then there's also, at the very end of the first movement, this great moment where all of a sudden another magic chord comes, just about 4 seconds before the piece is over. Unbelievable place. I don't know, do we have the end also?
Yes.
Oh, goody, gumdrops. Okay, so let's hear the beginning. At the beginning, okay, listen to this. See, there's the woodwinds playing the theme. Now, supposedly this is a Polish folk tune here, coming. Who knows? Okay. So now can we notice that the timpani keeps playing this heartbeat. Now this conductor who's doing this performance is doing it unbelievably much faster than we did, or we'll do. So that shows you how flexible music is, even though it's printed in a certain way. And it's like doing to be or not to be, how many million different ways there are of making that statement. So this performance of ours here is going to be a little bit less fast. Okay, so the timpani thing that is going on is supplanted at the second, the ABA part, the A part, with the celesta going bing, bing, instead of boom, boom, boom. So it's a fantastic, fantastically constructed piece. Okay, so now we have the second movement, right?
Yes.
Could we hear it and maybe turn up the volume a little bit? This is, it says murmuring. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Bless you yet again. Okay, it's better you should do it here than later. Because it's a really soft piece. We're also not doing it quite at that tempo. I don't think my arm can move that fast. But it is reminiscent in a way of the Mendelssohn Overture to Midsummer's Night Dream and the Queen Mab Scherzo. And it's whisper music, and it's got these tremendous sounds you heard, kind of scintillations, you know. It's just like whispers and mosquitoes and gnats and things like that. Then in the middle comes a kind of a majestic theme, probably, no doubt, another Polish folk tune that I'd never heard of. And then comes a recapitulation, ABA again. I mean, ABA again, not again, but again. That's that movement. Now, the third movement is basically, just as in most of Lutosławski's music, it is the central issue of the whole piece, and it starts with a passacaglia. The passacaglia is a dance in 3/4 that has a ground bass. That means it keeps repeating over and over and over again with different filigrees on top. And so it starts totally quietly with just a double bassist playing the ground bass, which is just little notes here and there, and then it builds to this tremendous climax with a lot of brass playing all kinds of things, and then it dies out, and then comes the toccata, followed by a chorale. And so these are the three things, and then all comes together at the very end, and it's unbelievably brilliant. And originally, you know, we were going to have, the whole season was going to be the orchestra as virtuoso. Unfortunately, it was not. We were not able to program as much as I would have liked to, because sometimes we had two performances in a day on Thursdays, if you remember. And you can't ask an orchestra to play two gigantic programs in one day. So this would have been, and last time we did the Bartok Concerto for Orchestra. So that this is our truncated version of the orchestra as virtuoso. So could we, I don't know what you have.
What I've got is the end of the third.
That's
last,
it?
Like the last 3 minutes of it.
Okay, well, let's listen to that, and then you'll hear the passacaglia. What's interesting also about this passacaglia, by the way, Brahms does it also in his, not so much, he does the Brahms Haydn variations, in which you have, the passacaglia, but the passacaglia is however number of measures long, and the filigree on top of it is the same number of measures on top, so it goes parallel. On the Fourth Symphony, it changes, in which the passacaglia goes this way, and then the other stuff kind of dovetails, so that you don't start every 8 bars with a new thing, so that this particular piece introduces new things in a totally different set of bars, so that it's very magical in the sense that you don't get bored because things come at you in different places. Then I don't know what the last 3 minutes are, but let's find out, and I'll tell you what's happening. This is a Polish tune, by the way. Sounds. With a harp and kind of mysterious kind of.
Mm-hmm.
That must be a Polish tune. Now comes this murmuring. And then comes a recapitulation of the chorale. That's it. This guy conducts fast.
Now, we've kind of gone through the whole program, and we haven't really opened it up to questions. So if you have a question that you'd like to ask or something you'd like to say, this would be a great opportunity to do that. Well, while you think about it, let me ask you. You were talking about Christoph von Dohnányi, who conducted that recording with the Cleveland Orchestra, moving fast. I know it's more than just your ability to move your arms quickly that goes into making that choice. How do you come to the determination of what your tempo is going to be?
Well, see, I had this horrible experience with Paul Hindemith. You know his name. Paul Hindemith was a great conductor, a great composer, a great violist, and a great educator, one of the great musical minds of the 20th century. So I had an opportunity to do an opera of his based on Wilder, you know, Bridge on the...
River Kwai?
No, not on the River Kwai. St. Louis Ray. Thank you. So this one is a different story called The Long Christmas Dinner. And if anybody knew what tempo markings, you know, the metronome mark is a mathematical expression of the number of beats per minute. That tells you the tempo. So if anybody knew what the tempo is in every single one of his arias and things, it had to be he. So I decided that I would adhere strictly to the tempo markings that he had written down. And I was so proud of myself because it was just, I nailed every tempo. So he sat in on one of the rehearsals, and at the end of the, you know, run through, he says, "Oh, it's very nice, but the tempos are wrong." So I said, "But that's what you wrote." He says, "Yeah, but they sounded wrong." So you must be wise in choosing how to interpret these things. So that taught me a big lesson because composers, and for example, Stravinsky recorded some of his pieces over many times over his lifetime, and each time they're different. So there's no such thing as the tempo. And I believe that Dohnányi is actually following exactly what's printed, but I think the second movement, the Mosquito Music, probably is good at that tempo that he does. We have about 8 rehearsals in order to accomplish that kind of speed. So I thought, you know, these are tinier mosquitoes that we're doing. So that's the situation with tempos. So one is very free. You have the same problem with Beethoven tempos. In the past, the Wagnerians ascribe to Beethoven music a character and adjusted the tempo accordingly. So they decided this piece is very dramatic and profound, so we're going to do it slow. Unfortunately, Beethoven wrote very fast metronome marks. Later, musicians decided, no, you can't ascribe a character to a piece until you know what tempo it is in. And so there was a Juilliard Quartet was one of the first to try to get rid of all of that Wagnerian kind of barnacles that were placed on Beethoven. And so all of a sudden, out of that came the whole new music, ancient instrument kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And apparently tempos were quite fast. I know that there's one man that I studied the Handel Messiah with, who is the greatest Handel expert in the world. And I spent a couple of days with him, and the tempos are incredibly much faster than anything you may have ever heard. Hmm. And he had a machine that was able to change tempo without changing the pitch. And he played a lot of Baroque music for me, and stuff that was like, oh my God, I have to drive to work with this music, you know? All of a sudden, at the tempo that he thought was right, then all of a sudden, the harmonies came at the right time, and it was unbelievably exciting. So, on the other hand, if you do Beethoven's markings that are his metronome markings, how do you know he's not another Hindemith? You know, so we got the moral and ethical problem, how to find the tempo. I know that one more thing. No, I know that you're taking deep breaths.
Go ahead.
When I did all those recordings in my other lifetime, I spoke to each one of the composers before I recorded the works. So I got an idea of how they think. And there was a composer by the name of Walter Piston, who was called the Dean of American Composers. I don't know what that means. But I called him up once and I said, can we talk about the balance? The oboe may be too loud here. Yeah, he told me, yeah, why don't you change it and do this and that. Then I said, about the tempo in the second movement. He says, stop. So I don't want to talk about tempo. That's your problem. So there we are.
Thank you all for being here this evening. Enjoy the concert, and we'll see you next season.
Thank you.